Hold on, coach, I hear you. Oh, I know, I have to plug in my... No, where is it? I don't understand. Anyway, hello, this is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. And for some reason, our stuff isn't working tonight. Our audio files aren't working. I have no idea. How you doing, coach?
I'm good, Rick. How are you?
Oh,
besides,
well...
technical difficulties.
What else is new? I don't understand why this isn't working. I can see... Oh boy, I can see on the meter it's sounding. It looks this is strange. I don't know, coach. I don't know what the bozo. Oh, I know. Here we go. Never mind. Let me bring up the music. I got it. There we go. Okay, we're back. We're bad. We're bad. Cause I got we got some files we got to play here tonight. So let me just get the right volume. Da da dee, da da do. Oh man. You think this is the first time I've done this? Okay, there we go. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Rick. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good, coach. And I tell you, tonight we're going to be talking to a couple of guys involved in local baseball. One is involved with the Danvers American League. He is the president of the Looking Forward to That. And the other is involved with ball. And it's great to be able to, there's some good stuff going on in terms of athletics.
Yeah, certainly it's an attempt to get back to normal, but again, still, you have to be careful. We now know that, the young people can be affected and the virus proved fatal to them. So, again, all possible cautions need to be taken, need to be adhered to, and hopefully that will be done by all concerned.
Well, when we talk, we're going to talk with Frank Morrissey later on. I talked with him this afternoon. We're going to play that interview, Essex County Baseball. And he talks, Tim, about the precautions that are being taken and about the new culture that's developing in baseball. Kind of interesting. You know how when you hit a home run, you do the chest bump and you slap your butt and you do the high five and stuff? Well, there's a new thing going on that the kids have developed, and it's kind of cool. So it's going to be interesting to see how that whole thing develops.
Yeah, certainly will. The culture of celebrations through all of the sports will definitely change, though. Watching soccer from Europe over the weekend, they're spinning all over the place. They're still chest bumping, jumping into each other's arms, slapping each other. They're not being really true to the guidelines they've been given. So, again, we just have to wait and see how it all pans out. Hopefully, the kids around here will be disciplined enough to just keep that in the back of their minds that they do have to be careful.
Well, it's up to the adults and the leaders, and they're very, very adamant about it. They're doing a good job. We're going to talk with Mike Brown of the Danvers American Little League and how those things are going. And the new interview is with Frank Morrissey. He's the coach of the Beverly-Salem Junior team in the Essex County League, worked with Mike Wilbur, played baseball in college, got a tryout, I believe it was with the New York Mets. But he talks about all those things, and the coaches, of course, and the parents are enforcing that. The kids want to play ball. So, they really understand the risks that are out there, and they understand, I think, not so much that, I shouldn't say this, maybe it's not so much the health risk that is in their minds, but it's the fact that they want to keep playing, and they know if they screw this up, they're not going to get to play anymore.
Well, again, and I hate to be the Debbie Downer of the group, but again, the enthusiasm to get back and play, again, you're really going to have to be tough on the kids, and we have to wait and see what precautions they are going to be taking, and how consistent the adults are going to be, because they get caught up in the enthusiasm as well.
Well, I think when you listen to the interview coming up with Frank Morrissey, you'll feel quite a bit better about this whole deal. Later on, Tim, we're also going to be talking with old friend Gary Larrabee about the Mass Am, and it's looking pretty good. This is quite an event, And Mark Turner, at the moment, I believe, is one stroke off the pace. Of course, he's from Bass Rocks. He's a Gloucester High School kid. We'll talk with Gary about that very soon. There are two guys tied for first, and we'll talk with Gary about Mark Turner's involvement in the 108th Mass Am. Also be checking with Mike Grenier, looking forward to that, about the restart of the Celtic season. So, Tim, before we take a break, what's in the sports attic?
I guess the days of watching the top Red Sox offensive explosions of the last decade will be coming to an end soon as real-life baseball gets going again. It's interesting to see players opting out, choosing not to play because of the virus and for safety concerns, whether it's for themselves or their family members. So it's going to be interesting. You've got the Redskins changing name and logo coming up. That's going to be announced fairly soon. It'll be interesting to see in what direction they take the naming of the team. And will other teams in the sports leagues follow?
What's interesting is to see the response from those who are directly involved in that renaming, or I don't even know how to describe it, but the original, they used to call them the people. The people were here before Columbus, before Champlain, before Eric the Red. It was the people who were here. And what I'm reading is they're calling themselves natives, according to whatever tribe they're in and so on. And they are quite pleased and quite behind the fact that Washington, the Washington National Football League football team, is dropping that logo. And it is going to be interesting to see, as you said, what direction they take. But according to what I've read, the natives are quite pleased with this direction.
No, and while they should be, because it's been a long battle for them to get this far. So,
well, you know, Tim, historically, you know, indigenous people, but from what I've read, I'm probably pretty ignorant of this, but they used, for the most part, that you have your individual tribes' names, such as Comanche, you know, Oneida, and so on. But overall, they called themselves the people of the land. And so it's difficult for me, who wants to be politically correct, I'll say that right out loud, I really want to, you know, to say native and then put American after that, because, you know, that implies Amerigo Vespucci was here before they were. And so, you know, I want to do the right thing, Coach.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for, well, they can go in any direction they want in terms of naming the team. It's simply just, you know, where are they going to go with it? You know, the Braves have announced they're not changing the name, though they will look at the Tomahawk Chop and probably try to get the fans to eliminate that. Though it's pretty hard to dictate fan behavior in getting them to stop. You know, you're going to go over the PA and go, please stop that, you know, when it happens. So going to be very interesting when these teams start changing the names.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was out at UMass, I thought it was pretty cool that Chief Massasoit was the UMass mascot. But then there were some local tribe members who did not like that, and UMass complied and changed it to the Minutemen, which I think is equally as cool. So there's a solution. To every man-made problem, there's a solution. So let's hope we can figure it out. Coach, we're going to check in with Frank Morrissey. We're going to listen to his interview coming up. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking with Gary Larrabee, and a little bit after that, Mike Grenier. We'll talk some Celtics basketball and other stuff. And then we'll conclude our program with a chat. I don't want to call it a rerun, but we'll also talk a little bit about Danvers American League Baseball. So all that's coming up here on MSO. Thank you for being with us. We will take a break. This is MSO News Sports. And, of course, this is North Shore Sports Night on MSO. And, again, you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com with suggestions, complaints, whatever. We'd prefer the compliments, though. We'll be right back.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
All right, we're talking some baseball now, finally, with an Essex County baseball coach, Frank Marcy, a familiar name here on the North Shore, a longtime coach, as a matter of fact. Frank, welcome to MSO.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's certainly great to be talking sports, live sports, for a change, and I know that you, as an educator at a middle school level, or actually K-8 level, it's been particularly difficult this year. And so I'm guessing with the transition from March 13 to now, you got to feel a little bit better.
Absolutely. I think, you know, back my last day in the school system was March 16th, and I think at that time there was a lot of uncertainty. What was going on with the pandemic, but people had actually thought, okay, so within a week or two, we'll be returning. And then as we got further and further along and realized the seriousness of the COVID-19, things started to be bleak. But behind the scenes, they were still planning for, even though the high school baseball seasons were canceled, local towns and local teams were still planning on trying to get some sort of baseball back in the summer. And here we are, which is, you know, we're very fortunate and the kids are very excited.
You know, I forgot about that, the fact that it did. I do remember when things shut down, well, you know, in a few weeks it'll be back to normal. And then we had this abyss where everything just kind of dropped off the face of the earth, and now it's coming back. So when did you guys first start together? And I should point out that Frank is the coach of the Beverly-Salem Junior part of the Essex County Baseball League. Let me start all over again with respect to that. Tell me a little bit about the Essex County Baseball League, Frank, and how it got formed.
Sure. So, excuse me. So the Essex County Baseball League basically is, it's the American Legion without the American Legion name. I think once the pandemic, you know, started getting going and the seriousness, and then everything was being pushed back with phase one, phase two, phase three, et cetera, Mike Quinn, the our District 8 Legion commissioner, still wanted to keep baseball rolling, but obviously it wasn't under the American Legion auspice just because of the concerns with liability. So he reached out to all the coaches of the local American Legion District 8 teams, and all coaches said, yes, what we'd like to do is play baseball this summer if possible, and this under the guidelines by Governor Baker. We'd like to give these kids who lost out on their high school seasons an opportunity to play. So what we did, or what Mike did, was we created a new league called the Essex County Baseball League. Like I said a little bit ago, it's your American Legion District 8 teams.
I think that's tremendous. And the enthusiasm you got, you said all coaches were in on it. I'm guessing parents were probably looking forward to it as much as the kids in some respects.
Absolutely. I think, you know, myself being a parent, and I have three sons, one of them is on this team, there was a little bit of a concern. But when you started to see what Governor Baker was rolling out and what the league was rolling out in terms of the social distancing piece and the protective wear and the guidelines, you started to think, okay, this is something that we can do. We just have to police it, because the kids, even though they're, you know, socially distanced in the dugout, you can only keep three in the dugout. We space them roughly six feet apart down the sideline or in our bullpen, and they bring their own chairs. Your head is constantly on a swivel, because what do kids do? They have a tendency to migrate towards each other, and we don't want them doing that. And I think once we started to really get rolling, we've played four games already, I think the parents have eased back a little bit the nerves and the fears and the anxiety, and they're just excited for the kids to be out there playing baseball.
Another layer for you to take care of as a coach and as an authority figure. I wonder how far what's it been like so far? Because I was talking to someone earlier, and one thing that we notice with youth sports is that the kids tend to emulate the major leaguers, what they see on television. So the high fives, the back slaps, the hugs, the chest bumps, and so on. They create their own way of celebrating now. So how's it been so far in terms of the overall behavior on and off the field?
From what I've seen, like I said, Rick, we're four games into season already, and from what I've seen, I'm very impressed. I think the kids are just excited to be out there and playing. They know the drill. At the end of the game, your typical, handshake line has stopped. Now what the players mostly do is you'll just stand at the baseline and just tip your cap to the other team and
there you go.
Vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
There's no high fives, no slaps, nothing like that. Typically what I'll do is if there's a good play and a player comes in, I might just reach out with my clipboard just to let them know that he did a nice thing. But there's no more high fives, hugs, nothing of that sort.
That's what I was curious about, because I haven't been able to get to a game yet. I was wondering at some point if we were going to adopt the Japanese custom of bowing to one another as you meet someone and leave with someone. But that's cool. I'm glad that the kids are resilient, and I think you're right. They get it. They understand it. Plus, they're very creative. What's it been like coaching for you, Frank? What are some of the differences, maybe, or the similarities that you've coached all along?
The coaching really isn't different. When we started, practices probably about 3 weeks prior. So I have a major league batting cage in my backyard. So we do batting practice here. But what we did, approximately three weeks ago was I put the kids in groups, and I had no more than five show up at a time. So they would come in one entrance of my backyard through one gate, have their masks on. We'd have two tees set up, a soft toss station, and then the batting machine. And they would spread out. We had chairs set up if they wanted to sit down. And they're in and out in 45 minutes. So they'd probably get, at that point, about 60 swings in 45 minutes. Then they would exit the other gate to my backyard. My whole backyard is fenced in. And group two would then come in. So we had, like, roughly a 15-minute buffer.
Mm-hmm.
Before group two would come in. So there's really no overlap. And then once we got a couple of weeks into the season, we were able to get on the field. The first field practice that we had, we did outfielders first, did all our drills, et cetera, with them. And then there was like a 15 minute to a half hour buffer. They would leave, and then our infielders would show up, and then we'd do, infield drills there. And then as the season began, which basically was last week, you're looking at basically maybe 1 week or one day where you could do batting practice here at my house, and then you're playing four games a week, and then half my team plays AAU. So they're already playing six games a week doing double duty. So now we don't practice as much just because the poor kids don't have an opportunity just to relax.
Well, I'd love to have played that many games as a kid, but I enjoyed practice as much as I did a game. But let me ask you now: you coach with Dave Wilbur, Beverly High School, tremendous reputation, tremendous culture there. Salem High School, you've got kids from Beverly and Salem in the under 17 and under group. Do you have a lot of varsity players?
Okay, so typically we're a 17U team. So on my team, I have 17 players listed on the roster. Two or three off the top of my head play for Salem High School, and then the rest play for Beverly High School. So we have a combination of, so let's use this past season, the lost season,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. A good majority of my kids, about five to six, would have been trying out for the incoming freshman team this year at Beverly High School. Then the remainders of this team would have been the JV team at Beverly High School, as well as some of them would have had some time on the varsity squad.
Yep. All right. Well, I look at some of the names on this roster who are very familiar, of course, to Beverly and Salem residents. And one of them that jumps out is Nick Fox, because it was Kate who suggested I get a hold of you and talk about Essex County baseball. I didn't even know that it was going at this point. So pretty cool. You want to tell me a little bit about your team and how you guys are doing?
Yeah. So currently we're 3-1. We played 4 games last week. We beat Andover 20-2. We beat Methuen 6-1. We lost to the Nor'easters in Groveland 8-7, and then we beat Haverhill 16-0. Overall, our team ERA right now is running at 2.33. We've got three top pitchers that are notable. One is actually my son Christian Morrissey. He's got 2 wins, 0 losses. With a 0.00 ERA.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
He's got 15 strikeouts in 8 innings. We have Benjamin Swanick. He's 1-0 with a 1.75 ERA. He currently has 11 strikeouts in 4 innings. And then Joshua Demers in relief has been very impressive. He has 5 strikeouts in 3 innings with a 0.00 ERA. In terms of hitting, I think you hit the nail on the head with Nick Fox. Currently, Nick is batting like 5-for-8 with 7 RBIs, and he hit a monster home run at Haverhill Stadium on Friday. And then right behind him is Griffin McKay, our leader and catcher. He's batting, he's 5 out of 7 with 3 RBIs, 5 runs. And then we have Cooper Gavin, who's batting 7 out of 9 with 8 runs scored. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I haven't at this point done our offensive statistics, but if I had to guess, as a team, we're hitting well over 300.
Wow, what a start. That's tremendous.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I'm guessing it's a pretty good brand of baseball as well, with so many experienced kids at this point. It must, as I said, it must be a good solid brand of baseball, and fundamentals are key.
Yes, it is, Rick. I think the one thing I've noticed just in the small sample of 4 games is it seems to be that the teams that we've played to date are a little bit on the younger side.
Mm-hmm.
I think because a lot of these same towns have a senior team, and the teams are grabbing like the junior varsity players, whereas we're fortunate here in Beverly, our senior team is laden with high school players that are now going to college to play baseball. Well, they're going for their academics.
Right. But
their starting lineup, everyone is a college player.
Wow.
So my kids don't have much of an opportunity to jump up this year just because the senior team is loaded. So a lot of my kids, or a good amount of my kids this year in the junior team, would have been playing for the senior team.
Okay.
There's no room.
The high school, with respect to pitching, what are you guys following high school rules more or less?
So what we have to do is, we have to do a pitch count. And, for instance, I'll give you an example. If the pitcher throws 31 to 45 pitches, he has to rest for one day before he can pitch again.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the number increases, it gets up to how many more days they have to rest. And I think the total that they could throw, not that we would do it, but 105 maximum in one game. But the way we've been working it so far, and it's worked to our advantage, is like my number one pitch innings in both his games. So we're not stretching our kids out yet at this point, even though some of our kids, and especially our AAU kids, they've been playing baseball since probably wintertime.
You know, Frank, with your job as an educator, it sounds to me like this is a nice little break for you, and you're having some fun with it.
It is. My wife, I don't think, likes it in the sense that she works for Fidelity. My oldest son, a former Beverly High School and Framingham State baseball player, he works for Fidelity. So everybody is home, Everybody has claimed stake to an area of the house.
Zooms,
and mine is right in the dining room. So my table is covered with either school stuff or baseball stuff. So it's a little crazy, but it's a good crazy.
I love it, Frank. Finally, you can't do this by yourself. Who's helping you out?
So actually, I'm very fortunate, Rick. I have two great gentlemen that are helping me out. One is my son, Anthony Morrissey. He's the assistant coach. And Phil LeClaire of Salem. So I'm fortunate that growing up, my family was all baseball. My father played down for the University of Albuquerque on scholarship. His father played AAA for the Boston Braves, the House of Jacks. I played in college. My son Anthony's played in college. My youngest son Christian is looking to play in college. So we're surrounded by baseball. So for me as a father and a coach to have my oldest coach with me and have my youngest play with us, it's a pretty incredible feeling. And I, you know, my kids will joke because I tell my wife, I'm like, listen, you got to get a picture of me and the two boys in our, you know, our Bevel or our Legion gear. I says, because this isn't, you don't see this too often. And, you know, of course, the youngest, like, come on, Dad, that's weird, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, listen, down the line, 20, 30 years down the line, you'll remember this and you'll point it out to your kids and it'll be a nice memory. So I'm very fortunate. And Phil LeClaire is a good baseball guy. His son, Keegan, plays on the team. He's a little bit on the younger side. So he's taking his lumps, but he's learning the game. And Phil would be more the comedian of the group. Anthony's, you know, a little bit older than the players. So they respond well to him because, you know, they're looking at him as a former college player as well as he's young. And I'm a little bit more on the stern side. I'm the one that, you know, enforces the rules. And I'm an old school coach. These kids know I've coached many of them for years. Respect the game. That's all I care about. We don't mock the game. We don't mock our name. You know, if it's a high, we're on the positive side. We don't run up the score. It's summer baseball, and it's an opportunity for me to see everybody as well as for everybody to play.
Well, it's America's game. It's back. And as far as I'm concerned, as a spectator, I think sportsmanship is a big part of the learning curve in athletics.
Absolutely.
Frank Morrissey, who is the coach of the Beverly-Salem contingent of the junior portion of the Essex County Baseball League.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.
All righty, then. We're back, and very happy to bring back Gary Larrabee after a week off. We'll be off next week, too, by the way, guys, because my wife will be on vacation, and you know what that means. So we have to take the time off from here. But, Gary, welcome back. Gary, sports historian and golf writer, and the Mass Am, listening to about the Mass Am this weekend, reading about it, and oh, my goodness gracious, I can't wait to get into it. But there's one familiar name way at the top of the leaderboard.
Yes, indeed, and that is the former St. John's Prep standout, Chris Francoeur from Amesbury and Renaissance. Chris is tied for second after the first round with a 3-under par 68 playing the Bay Point course. One thing we should make note here of, Rick and Tim, that for the first time the Mass Golf is using two courses for the 36-hole qualifying today and tomorrow to get everyone around in plenty of time. I mean, 72 players played Catanza today, 72 played Bay Point in Meadow Poison. They'll switch courses tomorrow. And what makes that good news for Chris Franker, well, actually, it's not great. It is great news. He's going to be playing Catanza tomorrow. But the fact he shot 68 today, one shot off the lead held by Jeremy Mead from the Shattuck. In fact, there were three players, guys, from the Shattuck in the top 12, which is very impressive. But the fact remains, the big news is Chris Franker ties for second at 68, playing at the University of Rhode Island. He hopes to play one more year at the University of Rhode Island. And, of course, the defending champion, Stephen Delizio from Salem Country Club, is in trouble. He shot 76 today, Tim, on the Bay Point course, which is much easier than the course he's playing tomorrow, which is Catanset, where match play will begin Wednesday morning for the low 32 scorers and ties after tomorrow. So Delizio's in trouble, going to play a great round tomorrow at Catanset, especially when we look at the projected cut of the low 32 being right around 147. 148, Delizio's going to have to improve his round today by four or five shots on the tougher golf course. So good luck to Stephen Delizio tomorrow. But right now, the defending champion's in very serious straits to make it to the cut. He's right now tied for 63rd after one day.
Well, you know, it's like the fickle finger of fate pops up and grabs you when you least expect it. You know, a lot of people probably had a lot of high expectations. I'm sure he was on kind of a high after getting the notification that he's going to have one more year to play at the collegiate level. His master's program, his one-year program, had been accepted. So you kind of think that the pressure was off in terms of waiting for that decision to be made. And maybe there was just a letdown based upon that exuberance.
Possibly, but I'm not sure exactly how the weather conditions were down there. There were a lot of thunderstorms and showers around Massachusetts today. A couple other noteworthy scores from today, guys. Nick McLaughlin, another St. John's Prep grad, former Mass Amateur champion. He shot 72 at Bay Point, tied for 12th. And the other noteworthy piece of information is the fact that neither Turner brother from Bass Rocks and Gloucester, both from St. John's Prep, neither Mark nor James are playing. Neither one qualified this year. And the additional bad news for the Turners is that there's no longer a golf program at Dartmouth College, so they're going to be, I have to contact them, guys, and see if they're going to move on to another school that still has college golf or not. A lot of college programs are cutting back after what happened this spring. And the amazing thing about Dartmouth is they not only cut off women's and men's golf, they've also closed permanently their 100-year-old golf course, Hanover Country Club, which has been losing big money for them over the last 4 and 5 years. So a tough piece of news for the Turners.
Gary, go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, Tim.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Gary if you could just run through the setup of the Mass Am one more time for us, because it's quite a tournament in terms of any event.
It's quite a marathon. 144 players, guys. They play 36 holes stroke play. Below 32 scores move on to match play Wednesday morning. If more than 32 players tie for that last, more than 32 players are involved in the mix, they'll have a sudden death playoff, hopefully at the end of the day tomorrow. Only 32 players can move on. Seven players broke par today. But we've got a lot of players who are not in good shape. Defending Mass Miniature Champion, Nick McCallion, another St. John's prepper, he shot 73 at Catanset, which really makes his chances very good tomorrow at Bay Point to make match play. 16-year-old Aiden Emmerich from Kernwood, guys, in Swampscott, and St. Mary's of Lynn, he shot 73 at Bay Point. I think he's the youngest scorer at 73 or better in the field. His brother Christian,
did not play well. He shot 76. Frank Vina Jr. from Frankcroft, 76. Real quickly here, Kyle Vincey from Turner Hill, 79. Charlie Johnson from Meadowbrook, formerly Frankcroft, 83. Brendan Locke from Tedesco, 88. Which gives you an idea of how the scores went in the first day, guys.
Yeah.
All right. How come the Natick Country Club, how come they produce so many really good golfers?
Well, it's happened this year that way, but I think it's a strong junior program. A lot of these clubs and those junior programs seem to crank out the better players. But in some tournament like this, Tim, you never know how it's going to shake down, but the fact that Natick and Concord has three players in the top 12 bodes well for what's going on at Natick. So I don't want to forget to talk about, Tim, our favorite subject, which is, of course, the PGA Tour. And we had another fantastic tournament over the weekend, the Workday Charity Tournament at Jack Nicklaus's Muirfield Village, which replaces the John Deere Classic from last year. And now the players will be even a stronger field. They're staying at Muirfield Village this week and playing Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial. But Colin Morikawa had a phenomenal day catching up with Justin Thomas. Jesse, a fantastic finish, a fantastic three-hole playoff. And Morikawa won his second tour event in 2 years. Justin Thomas was looking for his third tournament winner this year. But great golf guys, and like we've said every week along the way, PGA Tour, it's been unfortunate. PGA Tour's a fantastic tournament these first 4 or 5 weeks of getting back on track, and there's been no galleries to watch him.
Yeah, that's a tough spot. You know, I was following it online, and the kid started out really hot beginning of the weekend, and but then you could, you know, Justin Thomas, he's right just behind him. And they sort of went back and forth. And when I heard they finished in a tie, they were in a playoff. I'm like, okay, we had a stumble and somebody stepped up. So I think it's good for golf. I don't think, you know, I'm sitting there looking at the leaderboard and going, okay, another week where you've got a few known golfers up there and a lot of guys that, for the most part, most people watching it just don't know.
True. Chris will see a tremendous field this week, including the return to competition of Tiger Woods. But for whatever it was worth yesterday, of course, the second player hole, Thomas rolls in a 50-footer to apparently win the tournament. And, of course, he's the son of a PGA club professional. And I kind of resent these kids who are sons of PGA club professionals becoming such great players, but you can't deny Justin Thomas's due. But then Morikawa, who's an Asian American, speaks fluent English. I think he went to school in the West Coast College. Rolls in a 25-footer on top of Thomas. And then on the third playoff hole, Thomas hits his drive right behind a tree. He's stymied, has to pitch out, and Morikawa hits his second shot like 12 feet, and only has to two putt to win the tournament. But great drama. Great for those rust golfers who can't be on the golf course or be at the tournament site. And we're still keeping our fingers crossed that there'll be no more issues of COVID-19 on the tour, and that we'll still see a FedEx Cup Challenge tournament at the TPC Boston in mid to late August.
Hope springs eternal, Gary, even in the summertime. What's coming up in your column in the Salem News?
Well, we're going to have a little birthday party, Rick. We're going to mark the first 50 years of fabulous Ferncroft Country Club and Dales membership and championship history. It's also in recent years become a tremendous champion of junior golf, and we'll write about that this week in my column.
It sounds great. Gary, great to talk with you. We're off next week. Again, my wife's on vacation, so am I, and so is North Shore Sports Night. But we'll check in with you in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it, guys. Be well and stay safe.
Thank you, Gary. Take care.
You too, my friend.
Very good. All right, that is Gary Larrabee, a sports historian, golf writer. We will take a break and come back, if all is well. We'll talk with Mike Grenier, probably about some Celtic stuff and some other stuff as well. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night. Again, you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, our general manager, if you will, Bill Newell. We'll be right back, so please stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, great to bring back Mike Grenier, sports writer emeritus from the Sentinel News. And Mike, welcome back, and good to hear your voice once again. It's summertime now. I don't know that there's been a lot of progress in terms of the state emergency we're under, but sports are seemingly getting ready to open up, so I have to ask, how are you and your family?
Yeah, we're doing fine. Thank you, guys. I hope you guys there in the studio and all my colleagues who listen to us, and of course, my old friend Gary Larrabee, he just had a run. I spoke to him yesterday. He seems to be doing fine, so we're doing fine here.
You know, Mike, a lot of retrospection going on here, and introspection, too, of course, on a personal level, but talking with the sports writers, coming up with ideas, coming up with columns, coming up with things to write about, they have said pretty much person to person that it isn't that difficult, but I'm not so sure about that. When you're involved in the day-to-day stuff, Mike, tell me a little bit about your experience in terms of covering an event, whether it be basketball or whatever you're involved in, and then, you know, a day off or two where you can put together a column of stuff that you want to write about versus what we have today.
Well, yeah, I think it's much tougher right now. You know, that's why I admire, you know, Phil Stacey and Gary Larrabee and Nick Chianino with the Salem News. They're coming up, they're inventing stories. Matt Williams, and what a phenomenal job of it. I mean, when I was working, you know, close to 40 years, you know, you kind of knew what was ahead of you, what was behind you in terms of schedule. You could plan on covering games or going to interview athletes for a feature story, athletes and coaches, et cetera. You knew it ahead of time. There was never a problem with that. Sometimes you had too much on your plate, but that was a good kind of problem. It's much tougher when there's not enough on your plate and you're trying to figure out what to put on the plate that's important to your readership on the North Shore.
Was there stuff for you, Gary, that was easier to do or more difficult to do? I'm either end of the spectrum, you know, something that you said, okay, I can do this in my sleep, I just have to get out of bed, I'm all set, or you'd say, man, this is going to be tough to take care of. You know what I'm asking?
Oh, yeah. I think according to the knowledge of the different sports, I mean, some sports, football, basketball, hockey, when you get into things like gymnastics or swimming, you sort of needed an education, but that's why the coaches in the area were so great. They would explain to you the nuances and the little things that go on, the minutia of the sport that you needed to know to cover an event and to do it properly. So, yeah, I didn't encounter too many problems, I think, because of the cooperation I received from so many coaches, literally hundreds of coaches on the North Shore throughout the years. I heard you guys tonight mentioning, I think, Dave Wilbert, that he was a classic example of a guy that, you know, I developed a phenomenal relationship with, you know, and so. But, yeah, I think the guys right now have a tougher job, and I'm sure that Phil Stacey and the gang of Seattle News can't wait for sports to reopen, hoping that the MIAA will arrive at a decision soon.
Tim?
Rick, I just want to make mention, we're talking to Mike, not Gary.
Yep. Oh, yeah, he mentioned guys. Yeah, Vic does that a lot because he links both of us together because we bridge so many decades, you know?
Okay, Tim, very funny. I'm taking my meds. They're all in where they're supposed to be, each one of the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday things. So thank you for reminding me. And, Mike, forgive me if I called you Gary. I'm sorry.
But that's okay. I've been called worse.
I'm sure.
I've been called worse. Now, how about our Boston Celtics? We talk about a restart. And, of course, the league is supposed to start up on and then the first round of the playoff August 17th. And the NBA Finals September 30th. But I'm a little concerned when you look at the Celtics day-to-day here right now on Zoom. You see that Kemba Walker has missed the last 2 days of practice after having nearly 4 months off with a problematic knee. You wonder, okay, how's that stack up to the team? Because they're counting on him coming back, and now the projection is that he might not be ready until the playoffs, which would be late August, mid-August. So that's a concern. And then you have Gordon Hayward, who announced even before the team got down to Orlando for workouts that he would be leaving the team when his wife has a baby, which could be like in the middle of the playoffs or September. So you wonder how that would work out, because under the protocol of the NBA, he would miss at least 7 or 8 days if he comes home for the birth of his child and then goes back. So there are a lot of variables, I think, right now in the NBA. And people are saying, well, the Celtics have a great chance now. They don't have to worry about going to hit the road and play the Milwaukee Bucks, who would have a home court advantage, or the Toronto Raptors, who would have a home court advantage in the playoff round. But then again, if you get guys opting out of playing, then that changes the scenario greatly.
But Mike, excuse me, Tim, for butting in here, but don't you think each team, every team has a similar scenario with some of their starters, whether it be a personal issue, whether it be an injury or stuff like that. I agree with, of course, those are concerns for the Celtics. But
Rondo, really, over the years, is still kind of a key for the Lakers. Still a great playmaker. Just broke his thumb. He's going to be out 7 to 8 weeks. And, you know, you get things like that that happen, and take the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, a good team. They beat the Celtics 3 out of 4. They're a possible first-round opponent. But Joel Embiid showed up in Orlando wearing his full, from head to toe, protective gear. Okay, and I don't know if he was trying to pay tribute to first responders or he was just joking about things. But you have to wonder about his condition. He's never in shape. So he's had 4 months off. You wonder what kind of shape he's going to be in if he plays the Celtics. You have various guys. If the Celtics could play possibly the Pacers in the first round, and Victor Oladipo, who is their best player, has already said he's opting out of playing. Mm. Just what you're talking about, like, each team has this set of problems, and I think it's also a fluid situation. Those problems will, for some teams, some of those problems will go away. For other teams, those problems will actually increase. So you don't know from week to week what's going to happen, which makes it interesting, of course.
And do you think it'll be fun to watch? I do.
I do, because I think we're starved for the competition. I mean, we're starved to see teams go head-to-head. As long as the protocols, safety protocols, work, as long as they work, then we can look forward to the games. I think a lot of families outside the so-called bubble will be worried about their husbands or fathers playing NBA basketball, but as fans, as long as the safety protocols are in place and they actually work, we're just dying to see those games.
Yes.
Looking forward to the playoffs. And it'll be interesting because no team does have a home court advantage. How it plays out. Now it just comes down strictly to head-to-head talent. I mean, I know that Jason Tatum has been talking enthusiastically about saying that the Celtics have as good a chance as anybody to win it all.
Hey, what's your reaction to Enes Kanter's blog or whatever it is when he just elevates Jason Tatum and, oh my God, who's the other guy?
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown. He just elevates them to godlike status. Well, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think Enes Kanter likes to talk a lot. That's the way I feel about him. He had a nice early spurt himself early in the season. I think he's much less of a factor towards the end of the season for the Celtics than he was early. But he's just pumping up his teammates and projecting them as potentially great players in the future. And, you know, has their time arrived? Well, you know, obviously Jason Tatum's time arrived this year, this past season. dramatic improvement in those two players. And, you know, we should mention a player who I think several Celtics are talking about, that Robin Williams, who has missed most of the season with an injury, an incredibly gifted athlete. If he can ever put it together physically and stay physically fit and not injured. And apparently he's been looking great down at camp, and he's a sort of legitimate shot blocker, a defensive presence that could really be useful in the postseason and in the remaining eight regular season games for the Celtics. So he's a player to watch. I think we're going to have a lot of those type players to watch throughout the league when play resumes.
Mike, when Tim is in studio, we have hand signals, and I can say, okay, Tim, it's your turn, and I've been dominating this, but Tim, it's your turn. I'm sorry.
Oh, hello, Rick. Yeah.
You can't see my hand signals.
You meant it, kid, when they signed him, and like you said, early in the season, he proved his worth. He got a lot of playing time, but over the course of the season, I don't know if he fell into Brad's doghouse or not, but his minutes went down, maybe Brad was changing the offensive setup. But when he did come in, just before the season came to an end, I mean, he was back to his own stuff. I mean, he went in there to play defense, to grab rebounds, not ever known as a big scorer, but he did take up a lot of space underneath the basket where you really need the help.
Right. I agree. He can do that, too. And especially, he can go all out in the minutes that he does get. And if this Robin Williams situation is what everyone thinks it is, and he can come back and help this particular team in the playoffs. If Robin Williams can give them those backup minutes as well, they're going to have, you know, Cantor and Robin Williams playing at the five spot there, and hopefully playing good defense and contributing somewhat on offense. So, like I said, but the situation's fluid, and Nick, you're right. I think it's going to be fluid for every team. That's what makes it kind of a really compelling viewing when they do resume play. There's going to be a lot of teams involved in the playoffs that you think, okay, they have a shot at this. There's no home court advantage. I mean, Milwaukee Bucks, I mean, they're a great team. They built up a phenomenal record to have the home court throughout the playoffs, and now that disappears.
You know, that's what I want to mention to both you guys is I think that, you know, a lot of people are looking at the asterisk for this season if pro sports get back underway, but I'm looking at it, and Tim's the historian in the family here. This is a historic sports season that could be retrospectively absolutely spectacular.
I agree. I think there's so many things that will happen that, you know, and people are going to say, wow, you remember that season, the coronavirus hit, and the Celtics came to the forefront, or the Lakers, and we just don't know which team will emerge. I think it's wide open, and that's what makes it so compelling. It is wide open. The Toronto Raptors are actually playing about as well as the team that won it all last year. That's another team to watch out for. It's good. I mean, Houston, by the way, is another factor. Houston, which has of course James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook just tested positive for COVID. So he shows up in Orlando, and now he has to quarantine for a while. And, of course, he's certainly one of the major factors in the entire NBA in terms of being a force on a team.
Coach, you got the final word.
I just see if you get a number of players opting out on every team, you suddenly get a number that has been positive. I think it's going to diminish the remaining games that are going to be played, whether it's basketball, baseball, hockey. I don't think it's going to be as good as I think some people think it's going to be. I mean, they may never admit to it simply because it's so sad to see a professional team out there. But, I mean, you can have some jewelry nights out there.
Well, look at the Nets, Brooklyn Nets. I think five players are not coming back. And that includes, Tim, our old friend Kyrie.
Kyrie.
Now, normally he wasn't going to be out because of the injury.
This is about the practice.
Yes, but listen, during the pandemic, first he announced that he was going to start his own league, okay?
Yeah.
And I was wondering if he was going to pay the players out of his own pocket, line up the TV contract, you know, address the liability issue. So that suddenly faded away, and now, supposedly, he's doing documentary films. I don't know. You just don't know what Kyrie's going to do.
That's interesting in itself. Yeah. Oh. Hey, Mike, again, I say this every time. We've got to do it more often. We're going to have you on more frequently if you're willing to do it, because it's just so much fun, and we learn so much. I really appreciate it.
I hope you guys, have a nice vacation week with your family.
I appreciate that, Mike.
And it's always great to hear Tim's voice. I look forward to these conversations with you guys, because it's genuine sports. We love the game. Kids will play the games, and you know, we want to keep that.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Talk to you later. All right, that is Mike Grenier, who was spreading knowledge. It's so much fun. Tim, I'm going to run the interview with Mike Brown after we sign off here, because we've got it up elsewhere on the website. It's about the Danvers American League Little League contingent. And then we will be off next week, but we'll be back 2 weeks from tonight.
All righty, my friend. Listen, you stay healthy. You and Arthur have a very, very good week's vacation.
Thank you, Coach, and you guys be safe as well. Talk to you later.
We will do that. Okay, buddy.
Thank you, Coach. Take care.
Yep.
All right. That is Tim Kearns, who is our MSO Goodwill Ambassador, as well as an incredible sports analyst in terms of all sports. I'm losing it in particular, but all sports. All right, we got a little static here. All right, so we have one more interview to run. I'm going to conclude it here on behalf of our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Tim Kearns, and Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for being with us, and stay tuned for our interview with Mike Brown, president of the Danvers American Little League. All right, we're back now with Mike Brown, who's the president of the Danvers Americans Little League team, or teams, I should say. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. I guess before we get started here, there are so many different configurations of Little League here on the North Shore. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about the setup in Danvers before we get into some specifics. And, you know, we'll start with the Danvers Americans. What's the makeup of your guys?
Yeah, so we are Danvers American Little League. We began in 1953, and we also in Danvers have the Danvers National League. They began just around the same time, and we've had great competition over the years. In the 50s, we both won state titles, and over the years, a couple of years ago, we were in the state finals, and we had a couple runs as well. And we are both a part of District 15 in Little League Baseball. So there's about 16 districts in all of Massachusetts. I might be wrong on that, but we play each other every single year, pretty much, and it's been a great competition. And it's evolving over time. We've had some crazy years in the past, but right now it's awesome. And our league has about with the COVID, we're down to about 230 kids right now. We're usually around 300, but everything's working out great, and we're hoping to be playing baseball soon.
You know, the tradition of baseball in Danvers is incredible, right on up through high school and beyond. And that's just where it starts. Starts with you guys. What's the age group, and how many teams do the Americans have?
We have our T-ball division, farm, which is our coach pitch, and then we have our minors, which is like single A, double A, triple A, and our majors. And so in majors, we have five teams this year. The minors, we have three teams each, and four teams in farm and T-ball. I should say single A also has four teams. And so the age groups run, T-ball is about 4 to 6 years old, farm is 6-7, single A is 6-7, and then minors, it kind of overlaps a little bit between ages.
Mm-hmm.
Majors, though, is a 10 to 12-year-old. And we have a good amount of kids. I mean, it's with two towns or two leagues in the town, we're still pretty strong compared to other towns in the area that have seen a little bit of a drop off with baseball over the last couple of years. But I think with the two leagues in the town, and like you said, there's a long tradition of great baseball in Danvers, Danvers High, and Danvers Babe Ruth. That we continue to get a lot of interest and a great rate of participation.
So, Mike, any of your players complaining about the contract and the schedule?
Not really.
No, I'm just kidding with the major leaguers. I imagine your kids can't wait to get onto the field. And you guys have actually begun play,
yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, we've been playing for or practicing for a few weeks now. We're in the final stages of trying to figure out how to get the final permits for gameplay. And we're hoping that we have that wrapped up in the next few days. We had a meeting last night to finalize our guidelines and everything. It's a pretty fluid situation with the state and the town. You know, things are changing week to week, and we're really, as a board, just having to just, you know, react. As soon as something comes out, we just sit there, we get together, we have a couple of phone calls, we react to the new information, and then try to get ourselves in an order of compliance with the state and local guidelines.
You know, that's what I was going to ask you about. What was the preparation like prior to this year? Because I'm sure that, you know, having been around for a while, you have a sort of a routine or an agenda that you follow each year, and then certain time of the year, you get ready for this, for that, you send out the forms and so on. But what was it like this year with the preparation and the other people? You mentioned the board and other people you were working with.
Yeah, everything was pretty much thrown out the window. Once March, we're in pretty good shape. Like every single year, we're trying to get our tryouts done, our evaluations done a little bit earlier, get our drafts done so we can get our uniforms made. But we had our major drafts, and we had our drafts for our minor divisions when everything got, you know, everything shut down. So we basically just went into a hibernation mode. And that's when we just had to throw the playbook out the window. It was fine up until that point. We were seeing what was going on with COVID, and we, you know, once that happened, we just told parents, hey, we're going to play baseball at some point. We just don't know when. Just sit tight, and we'll get back to you. And that was really because Little League, we had Little League in our back corner, and it was, if you looked at other sports, that was the big difference maker, at least in my opinion, that, you know, lacrosse had Massachusetts lacrosse, and hockey had Mass Hockey, and like softball had their, you know, they were part of Little League. They were staying true to their course. But we just had Little League with their big organization behind us, just with their lawyers, their doctors telling us, you know, what we should be doing. And I think that was a big deal to keep us, you know, in a holding pattern and for what we did. And we're hopefully, you know, it's great to be playing baseball. It's been a long road. But once we get that first game underway, it's going to be stressful just to keep in the guidelines. And, you know, we have a lot of responsibility now, but it's going to be well worth it once we can get back to playing a real game.
Well, you've always had a lot of responsibility. This just adds to it. What are some of the guidelines that the kids and probably the managers, the umpires, and the parents have to adhere to?
Yeah, so we're still finalizing everything, but the biggest guideline, I think, is there's going to be some mask use with whether they're base runners or at the plate, as long as it's not a safety risk to the players. Umpires and managers will be in masks, and I actually just saw a clip of Jason Varitek umping a game at Fenway, or simulated game, and he had a mask on. So I was like, all right, well, if he's doing we'll have to kind of buck up and get it done. Some restrictions with, of course, with like equipment use, there's no sharing this year. There's a lot of, you know, we spent thousands on sanitation at the field, and so that's another part of our responsibility that we have to be keeping up with, just disinfecting everything that we use, and the players will disinfect before and on the field. With phase three, there are some restrictions, like 100 people per field or spectators,
mm-hmm.
And then 25 players on the field at any given time. So there's definitely some other little things here and there, but I think the biggest thing is going to be like the mask use, like when do you have to use it, and then basically, you know, the game hasn't changed at all either, which is great. So it's really just a matter of getting the kids there. And a lot of the fun stuff, you know, the fist bumps and that stuff is going to have to wait this year, which is unfortunate. But I think, you know, I have kids in the majors and AA division, and the kids get it for the most part, especially the 10 to 12-year-olds. They're pretty good with, you know, keeping some distance with each other and not, you know, they've been kind of attuned to the situation in that age group too. So, but overall, it's going to be a fun game. We're going to have to keep, hopefully, that the spectators will be in compliance with their requirements, with just social distancing and some masks. It's going to be interesting, but I think we're in good shape.
You know, I think one of the interesting things just hit me is, you know, how kids emulate major leaguers and so on, whether it's with rock groups or with sports teams. They don't have anybody to copy now, so they're going to set their own standards out there in the field and some of the things that they do.
Yeah, it's really interesting not having major league sports to watch. And I hope that, you know, for my own opinion, I hope the baseball players keep playing, because there's a trickle-down effect.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to happen with this inspiring kids. I mean, you have the die-hard baseball kids that are going to keep playing no matter what. But there's a group of kids that, are they going to pick up a lacrosse stick? Are they going to, you know, just play hockey all year round? Are they going to just keep playing soccer? I mean, baseball is competing with a lot of competition with other travel teams and great organizations. And baseball needs to be attractive to the kids so that they keep playing. And I think right now it's a good opportunity if baseball is almost ready to go. I know basketball is firing up, but if they can get out there and get ahead of it and be the only game in town, I think people will watch, because people haven't been watching any sports recently.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
So I think it's out there and just be seen. And I don't think it will be actually a fun game to watch with no one there, because it's going to be more about the game, you know, showing the fans eating hot dogs and things like that. And I think that's kind of where baseball has turned to over the last couple of years, kind of like the spectacle rather than it's a pretty amazing game when you get out there and get on a big baseball field and have someone ripping line drives at your face and making the plays. And I hope it's, you know, they get back on the field and we can see that soon.
Final question, Mike. What's the schedule look like for Danvers Little League?
So we don't have any more games this week. I think we got some tropical storms coming in. So hopefully if we can play on Monday, we'll play on Monday. So this year is a little different. We're going to be playing like Middleton, Topsfield, and Boxford plays in the Tri-Town League, and Boxford and Middleton pretty much canceled their league altogether this year, which left Middleton with no one to play. And the National League, with their makeup of how some players didn't come back, they had to adjust their teams. We stayed true to what we had, and so we're not doing any intertown with the Nats. We might do something at the end of the year, like the intertown championship that we haven't done in many years, so we're still kicking that can around. But we're going to be playing Middleton and one Topsfield team for like our majors and our double and triple A, and that all starts next week. So no matter what, we're playing Middleton Monday and Tuesday and through the next 6 weeks. And, you know, practices are going to go downhill a little bit just because of the availability of fields. We're only playing Monday through Friday this year so that people can have their weekends available. And but our schedule has done a great job. Our board's done a really fantastic job of just getting everything ready to go. And we have a lot of talented people on the board that come from a lot of different professions that were able to lend that sort of skill to, you know, buying hand sanitizer and work with the police to help with our background checks, to school directors that understand some of the COVID language and practices that are happening at the collegiate level. And that all went into getting this ready to go. And we're hopefully Monday we're playing some games and the kids are happy.
All right, that is Mike Brown, the president of the Danvers Americans Little League Baseball team.